This is the Should Have Bet More podcast, presented by Goal Boys Network. Here's your host, Will Hill.
Welcome to the Should Have Bet More podcast, presented by Goal Boys. Coming up on the show, Jonathan Von Tobel of VSiN. VSiN Primetime will join us. We'll go over some NBA. Haven't done much NBA the last week or two. Get his thoughts on the NFL, these quarterbacks, the draft, the whole quarterback carousels. We've got some developments with Stafford. Not that we know anything, but just rumors of him talking to Brady in Vegas. So we'll get his thoughts on that. And I'll start with the NBA. Haven't done much NBA since the trade deadline. Just done a little here and there. I've thrown a couple questions about, hey, is it Celtics Thunder? Is that an inevitable NBA Finals to some of these guests we've had on the past couple weeks? And I do think that is still the likely final. But I mentioned at the trade deadline that the NBA needed some juice, and they got it. They got a little boost in the arm with LeBron, with Luka going to the Lakers to join LeBron, and Butler going to the Warriors to just, you know, spice up those teams, give a little shake up the snow globe a little bit, because it got very just, man, I can't remember a regular season with less juice, with less enthusiasm. I think the ratings really reflect that than this year, where just people are kind of, I don't know, there's not a lot of buzz about the NBA, but Luka going to the Lakers and Butler going to the Warriors kind of ignited the league, and both teams have played well here. And I think people are getting a little, I'll get to the odds in a second. People have gone a little overboard with the Lakers just because they had a nice win against Denver, and then they beat Dallas in the revenge game. They, by the time you listen to this, they will have played Minnesota Thursday night, taping this right before that game starts. But they did lose to Charlotte and Utah in the last four or five games. I think people need to calm down a little bit. But Luka has started to get his sea legs under him a little bit. Him and LeBron just, you know, both so smart, such good scorers, such good passers, both good. I mean, they both just, and it's cliche, and you're going to hear this a lot between now and especially when the playoffs start, just those two guys in the playoff series and those two guys dissecting your defense, they can make up for a lot of flaws, and they have flaws. They probably don't have enough shooting, don't have enough size, defense, all that stuff, but they defended well enough. To me, they're not winning the championship. They're not going to the finals, but they can, the old cliche of team you don't want to play, they could be at least a pain for somebody to play. But them being relevant, being exciting, having Luka, which we're a month later, I still can't believe he's on the team. And Butler with the Warriors, Butler, they've only lost one game. Now, some of it's the schedule, but again, they have flaws too with Butler's basically their tallest player. They don't have a lot of shooting, which is strange to say about Golden State team. They don't have a lot of size, but Butler and Curry is a nice duo. You throw in Green, you throw in some of those young guys, and those teams, you know, have some juice, and the league has more juice than it had a month ago before the deadline. Just looking at the futures here, go to DraftKings. Celtics and Thunder both +210, dead even, co-favorites to win the title. Then you go Cavs 6-1, which is crazy for a team that's 48-10, whatever they are. Nuggets are 15-1. Then Lakers 17-1. Knicks at 18-1. Knicks are not winning the championship. Warriors 19-1. Then you have a fall off of the Grizzlies 35-1. The Bucks 40-1. Dallas 50-1. Anything after this is you know, is certainly unlikely. Clippers 55-1. Minnesota 60-1. JVT's coming up soon. I know JVT does like this Timberwolves team. I don't see a great bet here. The bet I've been talking about for weeks, months, and it's down to +240 now. It's +295 when I did it on Monday. I still think we are headed for a Thunder Celtics NBA final. It's nothing profound to sit here and talk about it, but I think I've been talking about this since 4-5-1. I do think this will be the final. And again, +240, it's not like +243. It's not like it's a great, you're getting a ton of value, but like you're tying up your money forever either. And you're still getting 2.5-1. And let's face it, both those teams are very likely going to be in the conference finals. And, you know, come late May, you're probably going to wish you had that ticket in your pocket. Even it's still +243. This is probably like the last place I would play it. Anything over $2. I think this is it's about the last bite at the apple, right? I'd actually suggest this. But I do think it's a decent bet. And if you look at just looking at the standings, we're close enough to where you can kind of smell the playoffs. Still got a little time. Still got March Madness, start of baseball. It is good. You get through March and then that second or so week in April. So we're getting there. We're not that far away. If you just go through the West right now, it would be a 1-8 Thunder Warriors, which would be a lot of fun. Grizzlies Timberwolves would be the 2-7. That would not be an easy series for Memphis at all. Nuggets Clippers is an interesting one, and then Rockets Lakers is the 4-5. That's a pretty good first round. And if you're the Lakers, I think a big key, get out of the 4-5, get your way up to the 2-3, avoid OKC as long as possible. And who knows, maybe SGA gets hurt, maybe somebody else beats them, maybe, you know, just put that off as long as possible, and maybe you can find yourself in a conference finals if things break right, because I do think the teams below OKC, as dominant as OKC has been, and they had a little bump in the road, lost to Minnesota a couple times, did not play well against the Nets on Wednesday night. I think the teams under OKC are fairly even, where you can just kind of take your pick from three, four, five of these teams, depending on the matchup any given night, that kind of thing. As far as the East, the 1-8 right now would be Cavs Heat. I would expect the Cavs to roll. 2-7 would be the Celtics versus the Magic. Magic play good defense, but the Magic are not beating the Boston 4 out of 7. Magic maybe win a game in that series if that, as the Celtics have a propensity to kind of play with their food, let a game slip away here or there, but the Celtics are not in any danger of losing that series. Knicks Pistons would be fun. That's one where both these teams were good in the 90s and the Pistons were good in the 2000s. Pistons haven't been good in a while, so it's fun to have fresh blood. They're kind of a blue blood franchise where they were very good at different times for long periods, and they haven't been good in a while. So it'd be fun to get that team, that franchise back in the playoffs. And that would not be an easy series for the Knicks because Cunningham's really good. The Knicks don't defend. That would be one where I could see that thing go in seven. I would not be shocked if the Pistons beat them. And then you have 4 or 5 would be the Pacers and the Bucks. The Pacers would be the 4, a rematch of last year's first round where Indiana won, but Milwaukee was all beat up. So that would be a competitive series too. So you're looking at, if the seeds hold today, I mean, you're looking at a handful of really good series in the first round. As blah as this regular season has felt, at least to me at times, if you get those matchups, I mean, Thunder Warriors is great. Knicks Pistons is fun. Like I said, Memphis Minnesota wouldn't be easy. I think you're looking at some good matchups if these seedings did hold. So we are, I think, in store for a good playoffs. I think I thought that last year too, and really, we just it didn't happen. A lot of the series just weren't great. The finals was kind of a foregone conclusion. Dallas was somewhat competitive in a couple of those games early, but not really. As I think I mentioned this before, Denver getting upset by Minnesota in that crazy second half of Game 7 at home kind of threw the playoffs off kilter, where we're all expecting a Denver Boston series, just sort of like we're expecting a Boston OKC series this year. Denver getting knocked out. Denver would have given Boston, I think, a hard time. They couldn't get there and couldn't win any games at home. It was very strange. So I think we are going to have a good playoffs, a balanced playoffs. And if it ever is Celtics Thunder, that is a hell of a final. I wouldn't be shocked if that thing goes seven. I would probably pick it to go seven. It's been a while since we got a seventh game of an NBA final. I think 2016, that classic Warriors Cavs where LeBron finally got one for Cleveland. That was the last time I think we've had a game seven in the NBA finals. So if that ever is the final, OKC and Boston, that's a hell of a final. Just quickly on the football, I guess Stafford is being recruited by the Raiders, and there's a he said, she said, of well, they just happened to run into each other at some ski resort in Montana, which I don't buy at all. It sounds like Ian Rappaport, who works for NFL Network, who said it's just a coincidence they ran into each other. It sounds like he's trying to save a tampering charge, trying to do one of these agents a favor, which is all these guys do. Rappaport, Schefter, all these newsbreakers, their Woj was like this, Shams like this. All of their reporting comes with a little twist of like, hey, let me talk to the agent. Let me see how this agent or this person of power, whoever that may be, an owner, somebody that they want to gain a favor with. Let me see how they want to phrase it, and I'll put that message out there. That's what it seems like, because I don't buy that. Hey, they just happen to run into each other. That to me seems like completely far-fetched. But I don't see the fit with Stafford to the Raiders. He's an older quarterback. He's a win now player. The Raiders are not a win now team. Similar to what I said with the Giants. Wait, he's going to go to the Giants and win what, 6, 7, if everything breaks right, maybe 8 games. I guess if you hit the lottery, you win 9. Same thing with the Raiders, where what is their ceiling? 8, 9 wins. Even with Stafford, I don't see that at all. I don't see the fit at all. He's in a tough conference, a tough division. That makes no sense to me. The team that makes the most sense, and I don't think it'll happen, is Minnesota. You have two good receivers. He's got a relationship with O'Connell from LA. O'Connell's a McVay guy, so he knows the offense. You're on a good team. You're indoors. That's a pretty good offensive line. That's just what, especially once they get Darisaw back, that's just a good team. That's a team that, the right quarterback away. I mean, they were 15 and or 14 and 3 with Darnold. I know the last two games they leave a bad taste in your mouth, but if you put Stafford, who is an upgrade, absolutely an upgrade over Darnold, and then you just add a couple pieces here and there, they do have some cap space. They got a lot of things you like about that team. Stafford to Minnesota, that team could make a Super Bowl, I think, in the end. Now, Philly's, I think, a cut above everybody, but could they play in an NFC Championship game? And who knows? Philly gets banged up. Somebody beats Philly. I mean, so it's a long way between now and January to sort of sit here and say, oh, they can't beat Philly. I'm not ready to go there yet. But bottom line, if I'm Minnesota, I know you picked McCarthy high and you traded up to get him 10th. You traded up a picker to, I think, one slot with with Denver last year. It's not like you picked him first overall. If you're really in love with the guy, maybe you just let him sit another year. You could always flip him, but I'd be very, very tempted by the Stafford relationship if I'm Minnesota, because I like my team, and you know what? It's just gonna be hard to win a Super Bowl with McCarthy this year. Not that you have that, not that you have a 1 year window. You've got a good team and a young team and a good young coach, and they're building and all that stuff. But I'd be very, very tempted to take a shot at it with Stafford. So don't think it's gonna happen, but I don't think the Raiders fit makes a lot of sense. So we'll see how this quarterback stuff plays out in these next couple weeks. But coming up, JVT, we'll get his thoughts on that. Some NBA, that is next. This is a Should've Bet More podcast. All right, we are back. Should've Bet More podcast. You can catch him VEASAN primetime. He's all over VEASAN, VEASAN.com. Let's talk a little NBA. It's our buddy Jonathan Von Tobel. JVT, what's going on, man?
Nothing much, chilling. We are in the home stretch of both basketball seasons, although the stretch is a little bit longer for the NBA. Not much, though. The end will be here before we know it. Very excited. I love basketball, as you know, both college and pro. So this is the best time of year.
Let's do some NBA. Haven't done NBA much this week. We'll start with the Lakers, just because they are the Lakers, as you like these brand names,
Yes.
and I know it annoys you. And the Lakers, the Knicks get all this publicity, but I said right around the trade deadline that the NBA needed, and they really got a big boost with Luka going to the Lakers, Butler going to the Warriors. Just add a little juice, add a little excitement. Some of these bigger brands, these teams that we like to talk about, or people that like to talk about, they got some, infusion of talent. We'll start with the Lakers. How much of this is just pure Lakers hype? How much are they actually a contender here after they beat Denver? They beat Dallas. I think people are a little quick to forget they did lose to Charlotte and Utah pretty quickly, but where do you stand here on the Lakers?
Well, I don't know if you're allowed to say that. I went on Gil's show the other day and mentioned just that. Like, hey, look, I still want to see what they do here against this tougher schedule they're about to go through. And they did lose, like you mentioned, to the Jazz and the Hornets. Immediately, a Lakers fan jumped down my throat. He's like, "You're just a Clipper hater." Like, it's like, no, like, it's fair to ask. No, I'm with you. I think the jury should still be out. And I think there's a couple of things you could point to and say, we should monitor these things, right? The two losses you're talking about. In one of those games, Utah had an offensive rating of 130 against them and absolutely smoked them. They're questionable on defense. Go back to the game against the Mavericks we just saw the other night, Will. Kyrie Irving demolished them. He had 35 points, kept them in that game, allowed the Mavericks to cover. They don't have any good point of attack defenders at all. Austin Reeves was tasked with defending Kyrie Irving in that game. That's going to be a problem for you when you move into this later portion of your schedule, which is going to be very, very challenging. I think they're probably going to be a solid playoff team. They've built enough of a gap that they should finish within the top six. But I also think that if you've watched this team and think like they're fine, they're going to win it all, then I think you're watching with blinders and ignoring some of the true issues they have. And think about this too, this rash of opponents they're getting without any, without any real true centers or presences like down low. You know, Dallas didn't have anybody, so LeBron kept bullying dudes down low and getting good position. You're going to take on the Timberwolves that don't have Rudy Gobert. So once this thing really starts to ratchet up and you're going to start to see some really good opponents, I'm very curious to see how they hold up defensively, because their perimeter defenders are very lacking, especially at the point of attack. And I think some of these good offensive guards are going to be able to cook them. And I think we're going to really learn about how this team operates on defense soon.
Some of these other teams in the West, who would you pick? Let's just pretend they're playing them in a series. The Nuggets, the Grizzlies, the Rockets. I'll leave it at those three. The Warriors, are there any of those teams you would pick the Lakers over? Would you pick the other teams? We'll just kind of go through one by one.
I mean, at this point right now, this is going to sound, I would say no, just because I don't think we have enough, a large enough sample size. Now, I'd say like certain teams, right? So let's focus on Golden State for a second. The returns for Golden State's new lineup and these new guys has been pretty interesting. I still have my questions about what they're going to be on offense. Again, not just the Lakers thing, right? Like we need a larger sample size with these guys. Having said that, the most used lineup for Golden State, when you have Draymond Green, Jimmy Butler, and Steph Curry together, have a net rating floating around like plus 20. They've been really, really good, but it's been a lot on offense. And I do wonder if that really is something that can hold up. We still have yet to see Jonathan Kuminga back on the floor. That's going to happen at some point soon because he's starting to practice now here again. But in that lineup that I'm talking about, it's really driven. So it's Steph Curry, Brandon Podemski, Moses Moody, Jimmy Butler, and Draymond Green, plus 20.8 net rating, defensive rating of 97.5. I think the defense is sustainable, right? Draymond and Jimmy are awesome defenders. Podemski is a pretty good defensive guard. You should probably be able to hold up there. But your offense is in the 60th percentile with that lineup. when you throw out a guy like Jimmy, or excuse me, like Jonathan Kuminga with those three out there, you're talking about three non-shooters that I think can kind of be a little bit of a problem, and you're somewhat of a small team. So are you going to be able to attack the glass against some of these bigger front courts that you're going to be able to face? Like, I think the jury is still out on Golden State. But having said that, like in a Lakers-Warriors series, I would lean toward Golden State only because you can play defense at a pretty high level while also getting two guys that really can do a good job of creating their own looks in Jimmy and Steph Curry. And I think that gives you a slight edge, but it's going to be very close between those two. And these other teams you talk about, Denver, I still think they have some flaws on defense that are going to get exposed by some of these opponents. We saw that against the Los Angeles Lakers when they played them last weekend. I just think the Western Conference, underneath Oklahoma City, throw them all in a hat, pull one out, and say this is the Western Conference Finals like team that will take on Oklahoma City. I'd be like, fine, I would believe it.
That was going to be my next question. Who are the four finalists in the conferences for the conference finals?
I mean, it's Oklahoma City and whatever comes out of this hodgepodge of these teams. I think they're really all the same, especially when you look at some of these. So we did this the other day on primetime, and I wanted to see what Matt thought. So I did these blind resumes, right? Pretender or contender. And all I did was take a team's record against opponents with a top 10 net rating, their offensive rating versus those teams, and their defensive rating against those teams. And it would surprise you how mundane some of these groups are. You know, a team like Memphis, for example, that many think could be pretty sexy in the Western Conference. Well, they're 11-16 against teams with top 10 net ratings, and their offense is like 17th in the NBA against those teams. They're very, very below average when you talk about how they can operate on offense. I would say the one team that I think offers some intrigue, they have a losing record, or they're like 500 against teams with the top 10 net rating. They're about 12-12, somewhere in that range. But they're top six in both offense and defense against those opponents. Minnesota does have a lot of statistical things you look at and go, yeah, that team could probably do it. You know, they're very good defensively against their best opponents. They have an alpha scorer in Anthony Edwards. They've been injured as well. Dante DiVincenzo might come back soon. Julius Randle has been hurt. Rudy Gobert's missed the last five games with a back injury. So once they're fully constructed, by the way, we just saw them storm back against Oklahoma City, beat them in overtime, and push them in two consecutive games, that I think that is the team I'm starting to rally around a little bit more as, all right, this could be the second best team in the Western Conference once they start to get healthy and get their pieces together, and depending on how the bracket falls.
The Knicks, you know, it's one thing. They were such a disaster, such a dumpster fire for so long that once you get good, your fans are so happy, and just you've got such low standards and such a low bar to make your fans happy. That being said, it's one thing to go from bad to good. It's very hard to go from good to like title contender. Do you get the sense that this team has a low ceiling? It's going to be hard to go from where they are now to actually winning a championship. Brunson and Towns aren't great defenders. They don't have a top three, a top five player, which look, it's maybe oversimplifying it, but if you don't have a top three, top five player, you usually don't win a championship in the NBA. What are your thoughts with where the Knicks are now and going forward?
Look, this is going to go right with my brand, with my disdain for the big markets. I think the Knicks stink. I think in the prism of title contenders, they stink, I should say, right? Like, they're obviously a top team when you're talking about the grand scheme of things. Will, you go back to, again, looking at teams, because this is the best thing you can do, this exercise, which is looking at how an opponent handles some of the best. So the Knicks against top 10 net rating opponents, they are 5-11 against those teams straight up. They are dead last in defensive rating. They're giving up 124.1 points per 100 possessions in non-garbage time against the top 10 teams in net rating this season. They are abysmal on defense against some of these great teams. Look at what Paul George announces, that he is not doing any more podcasts, and then comes out and drops like 27-7-7 on him, right? He immediately comes out and is absolutely pretty solid, and they end up covering a big number against New York. You said it. Karl Anthony Towns is not a good rim defender. You don't really have a good point of attack defender that can really stay in front of him. You can go after guys like Brunson. Like, this is a team that has a very high ceiling on offense, but their floor is so low on defense that I don't think that you should trust this team to be able to win, you know, 2, 3, 4 series and win a championship. I think that's pretty, it's pretty hard. And then you just look at the Eastern Conference. You know, you're going to run into Cleveland, you would assume. Obviously, Boston should be able to torch them like they did the other night. And I would say this now, as texted with Mitch Moss the other day, I wouldn't be sleeping if you get like a 3-6 matchup or a 4-5 matchup with Detroit, because the Pistons are a very good shooting team with a guy who can go after mismatches in Cade Cunningham and really test your defense, which has been absolutely abysmal. If you can't play defense, you cannot win championships, and this is the worst defense without a doubt in the league against the best opponents.
Yeah, that would be a fun sort of like 90s throwback series. Knicks versus Pistons.
Wouldn't it
Pistons
be
are one of
great?
those teams. Yeah, it's just it's more fun when they're good. They haven't been good in a while. That's great uniform, great tradition. I like that the fact that the Pistons are playing well here. Any awards worth a bet in your mind?
I mean, so these are a couple of things. Let me double check. I haven't checked the price for a while, but the aforementioned Cade Cunningham. One of the things I had texted are we have a Doug Gottlieb group chat, and I had texted this to them, which was, "Hey, do you look at Cade Cunningham?" And this is a couple of days ago, so I want to get this updated price at -150 to win Most Improved Player of the Year because, and it's still, and I would say right now because it's up to -240 now, I would still actually say to your audience that that's somewhat still of a palatable price. He is probably the front runner. Not just by the odds, but just by narrative for some of these voters to win most improved. He's having a very strong year. He's been a big reason why the Pistons have turned things around. But the other important part is the guy who is going to push him for most improved, Norman Powell, is injured and has missed the last four or five games and doesn't seem to be close to coming back. So now all of a sudden you look around at what this could be. Maybe Hero can give him a push. Dyson Daniels, who leads the league in steals, is 50-1. You could potentially look at him as a candidate for this award as maybe a. Here you go, kid. We'll give you votes because you're not going to win Defensive Player of the Year, despite the fact that you're not going to lead the league in steals and should be an all-defensive player this year. I think Dyson Daniels, if you want like a fun long shot to sweat out, that might be worth something. But we're seeing this trend down recent years where when guys make the so-called star turn, voters will give them most improved. We saw Ja Morant get it. We saw Brandon Ingram get it a few years ago, and Julius Randle as well. And now Randle was actually a very much improved candidate, but I think that that's probably where you're going to end up going here with Cade Cunningham winning most improved. Again, -240. I still think you can actually lay that given what the market looks like. And if you want a long shot, I'd gravitate toward Daniels.
I mentioned this maybe a month ago just because a friend of the show, Reed Walk, works for Sports Illustrated SI Betting. He came here, he texted me, he said, Malik Beasley, 25-1, sixth man of the year. It's down to +350. Pritchard's the favorite. Do you have any thoughts on that market?
Yeah, so I was on with our buddies Dustin and Patrick like a month ago or so, and they asked like, "Hey, what's a long shot MVP or excuse me MVP awards thing that you would look at?" And I immediately said Malik Beasley 20-1 to win sixth man of the year. His shooting season is absolutely he's been tremendous for the Detroit Pistons. He's been a key cog coming off the bench for a team that might finish in the playoffs. Windhorse had a great stat the other day on his podcast, which is the what are we at here for the Pistons right now? I think like 36-ish wins or something like that. The 36 wins that they have, 33 wins that they have right now is more than they've had the last 2 years combined. Like this has been the last few years have been brutal for the Pistons. And while Cunningham's going to get credit, JB Bickerstaff is going to get credit, a guy like Malik Beasley has been a very big driving force behind that. And I don't know if at the current price I would do it because Peyton Pritchard's been kind of on a tear. Boston's been going through some injuries, so he's been getting some really good reps and a lot more minutes, and his shots are going up, and he's been putting up some big numbers. But he is very live, I think, to win the award. I don't think Pritchard's going to run away with this thing.
Last NBA one before we just a couple quick football thoughts. What in terms of the Sixers? What do you like? Is this a team that just has to tank to preserve their
Yes.
pick? What are they going forward?
You done. Tell Paul George, bring the podcast back. You're fine. We don't need you. We need you to actually. It's funny. Steph Ngo, who I don't know who he works for now, but he covers basketball. He actually tweeted out yesterday or today that he actually statistically in the only category is rebounds, but he actually does better when releasing a podcast when he doesn't. So he actually should bring this back. But no, you look. You're a team that is not going to go anywhere. You are going to be lucky if you get inside of the top 10 again here, just to maybe grind your way through, right? The what we'll call the Southeast Invitational, because it looks like Orlando, Miami, and Atlanta are all going to be play-in teams. So even if you grind your way through that, you win two play-in games to get to the eighth seed. Okay, cool. Like you're going to go to bat and try to take on Cleveland without Joel Embiid in a 1-8 matchup and get absolutely steamrolled. I just don't understand what the point is. You need to get that top six pick. It's a good draft. You can find a pretty solid, talented player to pair with what you have. Remember, they still have Jared McCain, who was very, very good for them and was an odds-on favorite to win Rookie of the Year before he injured his knee. So you've got some good pieces. You got good young pieces as well. Try to pair those with those guys. Give yourself some depth and give another crack at this. And let Joel Embiid have a surgery that he so desperately needs potentially and have him 100% healthy for the first time ever when you get into the regular season next year. I don't think there's any point to make this push for the playoffs.
And they're past the point where they can trade him, right? I give myself credit. I remember I had Kelly on during the playoffs, and I think it was right before they lost the Knicks. I said, you know what? I think this is your last chance to trade Embiid. He's older. He's had a lot of injuries. He's a big guy. I could see this going south. Let me try to get the Godfather-ish package before it's too late. It's probably too late at this point, right? It has to be.
I mean, yeah, I don't know if it would be too late because there's always, it's like the girlfriend boyfriend thing, right? Like you always feel like you can fix them. You know, if they're hot enough, you feel like you can fix them. And so I think that if there's a team out there that feels like their training staff, their way they handle players, you know, we could fix Joel Embiid and still get that MVP type player. Now, the question is, what degree of the package will you get if you're going to trade him? That's going to be the real question. But I still think you could probably get something for him. But to your overall point, and I think you're right about that, you know, you're trading it for 75 cents on the dollar as opposed to the full dollar at this point right now, if you do, but I don't think they're going to.
Last couple NFL, where's Stafford going?
I mean, after the secret Montana meeting, I think it's probably got to be the
Wasn't a
Raiders, right?
meeting, wasn't secret, wasn't how about that whole back and forth between, I guess, Ian Rappaport and Schultz at a
Dude.
Starbucks about what happened and whether it was secret or they just ran into each other and they almost, you know, came to blows. Crazy.
How about that? I don't know if I want to. Can I curse on your
Yeah.
podcast? Did you see the quotes?
I read through it, but you can repeat it.
Schultz went up to Rappaport at the Starbucks and then he said, "You got a fucking problem with me. You say it
Yes.
to my fucking face,"
Yes.
which is hilarious. No, look, I'm out here in Las Vegas and I am very much annoyed by the Raiders franchise because I work for ESPN Las Vegas part time out here. So, you know, I do some coverage of Las Vegas. And what annoys me so much about this franchise is they have hypnotized their fans to do the whole sis boom bah Raider way, auto wind is a Raider bull, where they get this sense of like, we always got to try to win. We're Raiders. When the reality is, you should strip this thing down. Why in the world would you go and get Matthew Stafford, who still has enough in the tank that I think you put him on a team that you believe is a quarterback away and you can compete for a potential championship? Why would you spin your wheels to bring him out here with a team that really has no talent on it to win again, what, six or seven games? Put yourself in like the near 10-ish in the draft, do absolutely nothing, spin your wheels, and then be in position again, Will, to go, oh man, we can't get a quarterback. Like, I don't understand this. Having said that, they'll probably go and try to get him because that's exactly what this franchise does. There's not really that much here, and they're going to try to win as many games as possible. I guess to an extent, it is somewhat admirable, but you're just going to continue to be this middling team that goes absolutely nowhere. And I would say the Raiders are the favorite because, let's be honest, they met and they met on purpose in Montana. I agree with Scholes in that I've got a bridge to sell you if you think they accidentally ran into each other up there. But that's fine. Teams cheat all the time. There's nothing wrong with that. But I would say Stafford right now, the favorite would be the Raiders to go and land him and spend stupid assets to go and get a guy that's going to worsen your status as a team.
Isn't Stafford smart enough to know that, hey, my football mortality here is, I'm running out of time. Why do I want to go to a division with Mahomes, with Herbert, Bo Nix, and Sean Payton? At least look like they're going in the right direction. I'm clearly the fourth best team. Even if I'm there, I might be the fourth best team. Wouldn't Stafford want to go to a better situation, you would think?
One would think, having said that, I would assume part of the Montana meeting was some other incentives, if you will, right, outside of football that would maybe sweeten the deal. You take the step back for a contending team, and we'll, you know, there might be some marketing stuff, there might be some promises, whatever it is financially that would maybe make it a little bit sweeter for him.
Guy's probably made like $400 or $500 million because he was the last, I
Hey,
think,
but.
big rookie contract. Remember, now it's the whole thing of all rookie quarterbacks, rookie contract. I think he was the last one to still get the big deal. So I mean, he's played for a while. He's made a ton of money,
I know,
and
but
they were
hey,
not
rich
that far
people.
away from beating. I get it. They were not that far from beating Philly, though. The team. It's not going to happen. The team that makes the most sense for him, I think. Again, I don't think it's going to happen. It's Minnesota. He's got a re relationship with O'Connell.
Sure.
You got receivers. You're indoors. You're not in the AFC. To me, Lions maybe take a step back because they lose the coordinators. To me, him on Minnesota would make a lot of sense. I don't think it's going to happen.
I would agree. I think Minnesota, I mean, the other team that like makes some sneaky sense, I guess, if you will, is does Atlanta forego the, hey, Michael Penix, we still believe in you, but we want you to sit a little bit longer. Let's see if we can maximize the window with Matthew Stafford because we still believe we're a quarterback away. I think that makes some sense. But Minnesota, ultimately, like if you did the Madden thing, right? Like I'm telling our guy McCarthy, like sit down for one more year. We got
Right.
Stafford coming in here.
Right. And McCarthy still has the knee issue. I know it's not perfect because you picked him 10th overall and you want to see if he's going to play. But hey, your team's pretty good. If you think you can get maybe 2 or 3 years after Stafford, it's not like you're married to McCarthy. You can maybe flip him for picks. I don't know. I don't think it's going to happen. Where do these other quarterbacks go? Does Rodgers play? Where's Cousins go? What do you want your Colts to do? Give me some of your thoughts on all that.
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure. Like for Rodgers, for example, like I don't know what exactly fits for him when you look around. I mean, if we're assuming that Stafford's gone, I know there's the rumblings that then the Rams would replace him with Rodgers. I think that does make some sense. Rodgers, if you look at it statistically in some of the metrics, he was actually he was closer like average to slightly above average last year than we give him credit for. It's just that the entire year was an absolute disaster. But if you plugged him in for the Rams, they could essentially be the same team that they were last year. In navigating all the off-field nonsense, the Raiders are a team that I think does make some sense for a guy like Rodgers. Having said that, again, one of the things that I brought up, and we talked about this with Ed Graney, who covers the Raiders for the Las Vegas Review-Journal out here, so much of part of this offseason for the Raiders, if you like listen to some of the noise coming out, was that they wanted to get an adult in the room. Like they wanted this thing to calm down because they just had a very public divorce with Devontae Adams. They had a head coach who constantly stepped in it with the way that he handled press conferences. And the last thing you need is to bring in Aaron Rodgers, who was partly behind the scenes, really picking at that scab to get the divorce to happen with Devontae Adams. And then we'll also go on Pat McAfee shows every week, and then you'll have to answer questions about that. I just don't think that really makes sense. So Rodgers is the wild card. I think it does depend on the Stafford moves, because Stafford is obviously going to be the best option. And then after that, I think you're talking about him maybe being the second or third choice. And that's really it. I mean, what happens with Kirk Cousins is a real question, where he ends up going. Darnold, I think, is a very real choice for the Las Vegas Raiders as well. That, I think, is a little bit more palatable. He's going to be very cheap. He's not going to be that great. You can put him in there and then draft like Shador if he falls to you, and let Shador develop and do whatever you want. I think Darnold would make a lot of sense for a team like Las Vegas.
Yeah, Steelers need a quarterback. There's a lot of empty seats, and like Wilson maybe gets a job. I don't know. It's just you think, man, I don't want Rodgers. I don't want Wilson. Well, I don't want Cousins. These teams need quarterbacks, and there's only so many to go around. It's interesting. I don't know how cheap Darnold's going to be because like the back of the baseball card, he still had a hell of a year. I know the finish was bad, but that'll be fascinating to see what kind of contract he gets.
I'm just more curious, like how many, when you look at it overall, so like how many teams are realistically sitting there with an empty seat when the music stops? Like, I actually kind of think there's more quarterbacks than chairs available, don't you? I mean, so you're looking at like overall, I guess the Jets are going to be an option to fill their seat, right? The Steelers,
Giants.
the Giants, but like, I don't consider them because they're going to draft high, right? They might just start their rookie quarterback, whoever that is. If that's going to be a potential for them, we'll see if they don't pass, because that's another interesting wrinkle of where they're going to be. Giants could be there though. Titans obviously are a choice. They have the first overall pick, and then we get the news today or yesterday that Abdul Carter's got this stress fracture in his foot, so maybe all of a sudden he starts to fall, if that's going to be a problem. We just talked about the Raiders. I mean, outside of that, what?
Cleveland.
Lions, Cleveland, are they? I mean, they're going to be stuck. I guess they have what's going on with them, but again, they draft pretty high too. What are they, third? Like, you would assume that maybe they're going to draft one of these guys at quarterback. Shador could be there for them, and they could draft them. I mean, I think it's likely Shador's going to be there, so they could be starting a rookie. I'm just really curious to see where this ultimately ends up, because I feel like one of these guys for sure, we're going to be looking around and
They might
going,
be right.
music stopped, and they don't have a house. Whether it's, Russell Wilson, I think it's going to be like one of those fringe guys, Kirk Cousins, but I think one of those guys are going to be without a chair when the music stops.
You put the Colts on that list? Or I saw the report, was it? They're gonna have an open competition with Richardson, and I don't know, they don't have anybody to have an open
Right.
competition with, so I don't, it's a strange comment. I get what they mean, where it's not gonna just hand the kid the job because he's been kind of shaky, but I don't know, you're open competition, but nobody have a competition with at this point.
Right. But you also have to, and you also have to consider like what your options are in combination with what those guys want. So like, Aaron Rodgers is not going to Indianapolis to have an open competition with Anthony Richardson. He views himself as a guy who can start, and I would say you probably could. Same thing with Matthew Stafford, right? You're not acquiring Matthew Stafford to go compete with Anthony Richardson. Sam Darnold, I would still say, is probably, to your point, not in the I'm going to compete with Anthony Richardson camp.
No,
So
he's
then
going
all
to
of a
start week
sudden,
one.
yeah, right. So then all of a sudden you're looking at your options like, okay, maybe it's like Russell Wilson, or maybe it's Justin Fields. Maybe it's like that level of quarterback that goes out there. And then eventually, like we're talking about again, music stops. Colts are like, we have to have this kid start. They're probably going to give him every opportunity to win the job. And they're just going to Indy to more than likely be a backup. It's probably not a heavy price, But whatever free agent quarterback ends up in Indianapolis, it is a small favorite that they are the backup in week one.
Yeah, and if that were ever Wilson and Indy, like that's just an odd dynamic where, like, what's the upside of playing Wilson? Does Wilson want to go there and back up Richardson if he does lose the job? I mean, there's a lot of moving parts with
You
this.
also just had a year, which again, everybody got this wrong, which I will like rightfully point out and thump my chest on. You had a year in which everybody was calling for Joe Flacco to start games, and then he went out there and was absolutely awful for them. Like, you don't want another season in which you have this issue where you have a backup quarterback that people are constantly calling for, and then you get it wrong again, and you stunt the growth of the guy you drafted fourth overall.
Yeah, Flacco had like two good games 2 years ago against the Jets and maybe that regular season game against the Texans right around Christmas, and that's given him this new gloss of like, another 3 or 4 years in the league and comeback player of the year. It's like if you go back and look, he's bad in the playoff game. He didn't do a lot in those games. It was really just like a couple of games where he played well. And this whole new, viewpoint of Flacco.
I keep going back to, I kept telling humans this, and he didn't want to buy it until we watched Flacco play quarterback for the Colts. I think, the smartest thing I've ever said. Go back to his games for Cleveland. What Cleveland was doing was the version of playing high variance basketball. They were trying to be the Celtics, which what they were doing was they were just taking shots downfield. Like, his average depth of target was like 10 yards. He was taking shots. And what happened was one of three things, right? It's like baseball, the one true outcome. It was like big completion, incompletion, or interception. And if you're throwing those interceptions, well, guess what? It's like an arm punt. We don't really care. They were playing the variance, and it really swung in their favor for like four games. And then they played the Texans in the postseason. And then all of a sudden, he was throwing picks left and right. And it was like, oh, this isn't working for us anymore. It's not sustainable. You're right. Like, every single thing you look at, he stunk. There was everything screaming at it, but nobody wanted to listen.
Yeah, it's a good point. It's a good way of putting it. JVT, appreciate it, man. What VEASAN Prime Time, VEASAN.com, where else can we get you?
That's pretty much it. Abby JVT up on social media. If you want to go up there and send me mean things, I'll listen to them.
All right, man. Appreciate the time. We'll do it again soon. Then live bet Saturday. You're back, right? VEASAN 4 to 7 Eastern this week.
Yes, 4 to 7 Eastern. That's 1 to 4 my time Saturday. I'm excited because obviously we're in the Circa College Hoops Challenge together,
Oh yeah.
so we'll be able to sweat those things out, watch those games, keep an eye on them, and should be a lot of fun.
We're not quite Sunday, the conference tournament starts. So this will be the last Saturday without conference tournaments for a while. I've mentioned this, these start a lot later. It used to be the 2 weeks up into the selection. It was like 1 week was full, the next week was full with the big schools. Now it's all kind of in that second week. I think these teams don't want that gap if they win the tournament between like 2 weeks between actually playing games. But it's fun, man. We're almost there.
Yeah, it sucks, actually. I would say, like, the West Coast Conference, they all play their last games on Saturday. Like, they're already starting their conference tournament soon. I like college basketball, but and it's kind of a bummer. Now we're just going to get every week. Now it's just going to start to go down and down and down. We're going to get fewer games.
Yeah, and the West Coast Conference was one that used to be that title game was on a Monday before selection. And what is it now? Have they pushed it back even further? Or it's still the same thing?
I think it's still the same
Okay.
thing because, like, their last games are on Saturday, and I think conference tournament then starts on Monday, and then they play all the way through, and then they finish that Monday, and then selection Sunday's after.
Because I remember it used to be the Saturday before, like 8 days before the selection, you would get like three or four standalone championship games that 8 days before the title, which would be this Saturday, which would be, a couple tomorrow, this week, March 1st. But it's not the case. These are just
When's
starting
selection Sunday is what?
the 16th.
Yeah, so their West Coast Conference championship is on the Tuesday, March 11th.
Okay, so that's pretty much stayed the same. JVT, appreciate it, man. Thanks.
You got it, buddy.
All right. Thanks to JVT. Appreciate you guys listening. Rate, review, subscribe, Apple, Spotify, whatever you can do. Appreciate all the help we can get there. We'll be back Monday. Start to dive into these conference tournaments as we turn the calendar to March. Thank goodness. But we will talk to you Monday. See you then.